Time to catch up with David Reneke. DavidReneke.com is the website, but the man himself has some great insights into what's happening in space, and he joins me now. David, hello, good evening, good morning, wherever you happen to be listening. How's it going?
Brand new year, brand new stories, ready to go, Bilko. Yeah, good. Now, no, they've been great. The skies are clearing up a little bit.
Fantastic.
Which is good.
Now, skies are clearing up, which is good use for the old telescope. Now, you're the telescope expert, and I know a few people in our listenership have scored a telescope for Christmas. Lucky people. Now they've got it. How do we ensure they get interest out of it and not end up putting it in the cupboard where it gathers dust for 20 years?
Yeah, this is what happens. You know, you get Christmas come around and people get a telescope for Christmas. It's like a little dog. It's got a lot of value for the first week or so. And then the interest wears off and the next minute it's been abandoned. We get so much of this happening and you'll find so many telescopes being offered for sale because people simply don't know what to do with it. And that amazes me because you've got a whole sky overhead that's just beckoning you to go and have a look. If you've got a telescope, the best advice I can give you is to go down and find an astronomy group or an astronomy club near you and go and spend a night with them. Take your telescope down there. They'll not only help you how to use it, they'll show you what to do, but they'll show you what to look at in the sky. I think the thing to remember is the moon's up there. You can't miss it. Go and find that for a start. I don't know. If you can't find it, I wouldn't sell the telescope.
But people like to have a look at the surface and you see the craters. And because of course
but hang on. It's not a good time to look at it when it's full. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is where a lot of people go. They get the telescope out, and we've seen it happen. They'll look at the moon and it's too bright. You can't see anything. And they go, oh, no. So that's all they can really find, Bill. Look, they can't really... They look at some stars there. What do you look at a star? When you put a telescope on a star, it still becomes a point of light. There are other things up there. You've got to know where they are. And that's where these apps come in handy. SkyView, SkyView, is the best friend you're going to have out there if you don't have someone beside you to have a look. SkyView, if you hold your phone up to the sky, you'll be able to see a little picture of what they're talking about, Jupiter, Saturn, the moon. When the moon's up, wait for its quarter or a half. Don't wait for it to be full because there's no contrast. You're going to have too much light in your eye. When you take your eye away, you're going to have this after image for about 10 minutes. It's going to ruin your eyesight. Not ruin your eyesight, but ruin your dark vision. So wait for it to quarter. Now, when you do, have a look where the dark and the light meet and watch all those shadows falling in the craters. And when you do look at the moon, find the biggest crater you can find. There's plenty of them, roughly all about the same size.
Okay.
Do you know what? One of those craters, at least one of them, well, most of them up over 100K wide. Can you imagine that all of Brisbane could fit in, and Brisbane and the surrounds, all the suburbs.
In one crater.
Into one crater,
You know what? I did see a joke meme the other day about that, you know, the big crater in Arizona that's been there for God knows how long.
Oh, New York. I went there, yes.
Yeah, and apparently there's some sort of tourist information centre just on the top there. Is that right?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, yeah.
Visitor centre.
The meme was saying it's funny how when that asteroid crashed to Earth, it missed the visitor centre. I went, yeah, right, okay.
Well, look, you know, people are silly, aren't they?
Yeah.
We've got an observatory. Yeah, we've got an observatory here in Port Macquarie in one of the parks there near the beach. And it was built in 1962.
Wow.
Now, you should see Port Macquarie now. It's like Brisbane City. All high-rises, motels, hotels, lights everywhere. People, when I was there years ago, people would come along as visitors and they'd say, oh, no, it's so bright. Why did you build your observatory here? Yeah, they don't think, do they?
No, my dad loves, there's a motel near the pancake parlour there in town that he stays at. I can't remember the name of it, but it's what he swears by. And he's been going there for 20 years. Not sure if it's still there anymore, but anyway, I digress. Now, I've seen press on this one. I've seen the photos. The people, how many of them are they paying $55 million each to fly to the space station? They've released the names and their faces.
When I saw this story, I thought, you've got to be kidding. There are people on this planet who've got this sort of disposable income.
Yeah.
Two grandfathers and one young guy with a family, they're going up to the space station. They're going to spend 8 days up there, courtesy of Elon Musk. Now, one of them, Larry Connors, a real estate investor from Las Vegas, Mark Passy, he's the chief executive of an investment firm in Canada. And the other guy is a businessman, a former Israeli Air Force fighter pilot. They're going to be sent up into space by Elon Musk on one of his rockets there about this time next year. And the pilot's going to be Michael Lopez, four-time flyer to the International Space Station, now involved with Axiom Space. And Axiom Space are big in building space hotels or motels, if you will. We talked about them. Now, these three guys have all paid their money, and they'll be flying up there for a holiday that's going to be out of this world and a view that you just can't get anywhere else. How much? Well, look, hang on to your chair. And when I say hang on to your chair, strap yourself in because this is going to surprise you. Yeah, we're not talking thousands here or hundreds of thousands here. Yes, we are talking millions. How about $55 million
crazy
a chair?
Is that how desperate
people have got this sort of disposable income?
Is that how desperate the space race or the space industry is for cash at the moment? They need to get it out of civilians.
Well, these are the people who are going to supply that money, and there are plenty of them around, don't you bet? Richard Branson's got dozens of people on his books now that have paid up around $250,000, you know, to go for flight just into orbit. This is going up there, but it's going to stay up there for 8 days. What we're seeing, look, we've got to be careful here. We put this in proportion. I think they said the same thing way back when the first aeroplanes flew, when the first flights were advertised tickets. You know, it cost you half a year's wages in a lot of cases just to go on a joy flight. And a trip from one country to another, let's assume London to France, would cost you thousands. You know, the price will come down. What this means is, and what we're looking at here, and the importance of it, is that this is the start of a brand new industry called space tourism. These are the people who are going to set the standard. And, of course, the price will come down as more competitors get in the field. But $55 million, and they can still go and just sit down and have a casual breakfast and put their feet up and, goodness me, I'd love to be able to do that.
We don't expect them to do any work on there. Obviously, they're going through their astronaut training like you'd have to go through. But basically, when they're there, the crew will be looking after them. They'll be sort of staying out of the way from all the experiments. It just would be an interesting experience. And don't expect any luxury for that. You'll be mucking in with the rest of them.
Well, there is one good thing is you don't pay your baggage.
Yeah, because you can't take anything. Oh,
and
I love
breakfast,
it.
And breakfast is supplied.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, now, we've said this before, David, space, the new Wild West. I mean, private companies now, spreading out to space, the tourism thing is just one thing, but companies want to exploit the natural resources that are out there, and you're seeing a land rush coming in space. That sounds dangerous.
They're getting inquiries already. The legal people in America are wanting to know from the FAA, what do we need to do here? We want to go and mine, but we want to mine the moon. We want to mine asteroids. What do we do? It's a new Wild West, and anything goes. Private companies are going to get involved with space mining. It's going to be a $1 trillion industry in probably less than 20 years, and it's going to be big. There's lots of rocks out there that we can mine. And there are people now, private individuals, entrepreneurs, consortia, who want to build this industry, and they will. So they need a framework. They've applied to the government, to the Biden administration, to form a framework of property rights, not based on first come, first serve type of thing, but real laws and things that can govern who can own what and who can do what.
But who's going to enforce those laws? That's the problem. You've got to have...
The United Nations is going to have to do that. There's a variety of nations who signed the Artemis Accords already. And that's some way, that's part of the way of standardising, you know, who can do what, but it's not full. China haven't signed it. They won't sign it. So there you go. Therein lies the problem. It's got to be all in or nothing at all. The Artemis Accords are one way of saying, you know, let's share this around, but China don't want to do that. And other nations can turn around and say, well, if they don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. So what we're going to have is a whole bunch of cowboys up there, and we'll see the same as we did with the Golden Ballarat with California and the gold rush and God knows what else. So I think we need to, this needs to be done. There are people now working on it in America now, and I think we will develop a very basic form of space law eventually, but watch out, I think the guns are going to come, no, I shouldn't say that. I think you're going to be
the lasers
surf fly very soon, you know.
Yeah. I did find out the other day that lasers aren't really needed in space. All these movies are really wrong because all you need to do is, you know, pierce someone's spacesuit, they're gone, or put a hole in the, you know, one of their spaceships and they're done for. So really low tech is really the enemy of space. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Yeah. Before there is some news that has just come through, by the way. Yeah. A story we can talk about next week, if you like. There's a woman over in the States there who's doing a degree, and she's come across some, not new, but an earlier type of propulsion system for rockets to do away with chemical rockets, which are... compared to high-powered cars we've got, it's like a little pedal car, what we're using today. She's using a form of nuclear fusion, the same sort of thing that drives the sun. And they've developed what they believe, with her equations and her help, it looks like they can produce an engine that may make us to Mars 10 times quicker.
Oh, how good would that be?
2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
2 to 3 weeks to Mars, when at the moment it takes 7 months. So this is a story we will talk about, I think, next week when I can look at it more closely. But we're now seeing a change in the direction how we move around in space. We're going to move around more quickly. The places we talk about that are years away are now only going to be days and weeks away, which is good.
And that's the start of hopefully getting to instantaneous transport once we harness that technology. That will be just huge. Anyway, more at davidrenicki.com. The links are up on our social media. Till next week, David.
We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.